Okay. We're up to Perek Dalet. Knias HaZihiris. No. I think we learned that already, but I'm not sure. Brother and sister can't live together alone for more than 30 days. Up till 30 days they can be together. After 30 days they shouldn't be together. Unless there are other, they have separate entrances and they can lock themselves, you know, in there, then that's not yichud. But in a situation of yichud where they're in the same house, more than 30 days again. V'derech knias ha-zehirus. How do you acquire the mida of zehirus? Hinei ma'asher mevi esa'odem el ha-zehirus u'limud ha-Torah. The first and foremost way of acquiring, feeling careful about what you do, like we explain what it means. It means that you assess what you're going to do before you do it, and you assess it again after you've done it to make sure that what you did was right or whatever. How do you get that feeling of being careful about what you do? By learning Torah. And lav dafka learning Torah about things that are asur or things that are mutter. Even learning Shor Shanogah HaSapara, right? Learning Torah that is totally irrelevant to Zahiris. Just the learning of Torah has a power of curbing the Yetzer Hara. And one of the main ploys of the Yetzer Hara is that you shouldn't think. So if it takes away the Yetzer Hara, it takes away that Yetzer Hara of not thinking either. And besides the fact that when you're involved in thinking in Kedusha, which is Torah, you're thinking in God's mind, so it encourages you to think more about Divrei Kedusha. And then you don't just function without thinking. So learning Torah has a skula effect, that Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, that it cancels out the Yetzer Hara, and therefore it makes it easier for you to be careful. And secondly, just the exercise of your mind in thinking deeply into things, which is what Torah learning is, right, makes you conditioned to think deeply before you do something, and to know if it's right, it's wrong, and to assess it, to be able to assess it, or whatever. That the general way of coming to Zahirah starts with learning Torah. Torah leads to Zahirah. According to this, it would seem, we had a question way back, whether in that Braisa, Torah brings to all the Midos, and along with all of them, you need Torah. Torah is not just the first link in the chain, but it's the preamble to all the links in the chain, or no. Torah specifically brings to Zahirus. And then from there on, each one leads to the next one, but it's not necessarily Torah that's needed along with each one, even though for certain things, obviously it is. Two more, we have a Seder. I don't want to show any favoritism. Okay, in any case, it would seem from here that Torah is specifically the preface to Zahirus, as he explained. It's not that Torah leads to all the other things too. Torah leads to Zahirus, and then Zahirus leads to Zrizus, and so on. That's what it would seem, even though it could be that it has both functions. Torah leads to Zahira specifically, but Torah you need along with all the other ones to lead to the other Midos also, but it seems more like it's specific to Zahiras. So that's in general. That Torah will bring you to be more careful about what you do. Omnam, al derech prat, hamevi lezeh, hu hasboninis, al chomer ha'avoda ashu chayiv ba'adam. However, in more specifically, what will bring you to Zahiris is contemplating the importance of the avoda is not service, what a person is required to do in this world, what your mandate as a human being, as a Jew, is in this world. The more you think about it, the more you'll be careful about fulfilling it. V'omek ha-din olecha, and also how much a person is judged deeply and intensely for everything he does, and therefore you'll be careful about what you do, because you know the consequences are very great. In other words, you know that the benefits are great because you have a tremendous responsibility. At the same time, you know that the consequences could be great if you don't live up to that responsibility. Put those two things together. Thinking about those things and contemplating them will lead you to be more careful. And specifically the parts of Torah to learn that will arouse you to these ideas are the Maisim in the Torah, which he's going to give examples later on, of people who didn't do what they were supposed to do and were judged, people who did do what they were supposed to do and were rewarded. Learning those parts of the Torah will arouse a person and inspire them to be more careful and serious about what they do. And Mamori Chazal, that also speak about Hamaorim Alzeh. And here, Mesil Shisharim says that not everybody is affected by the same things, because not everybody is on the same level. What affects a person on a higher level does not affect a person on a medium level, and what affects a person on a medium level doesn't affect a person who's on a lower level. And a person, therefore, has to think and be involved in those things that are on his level, that will affect him, and not be things that are either on a lower level than him or a higher level than him. And there are three levels, and we're not going to discuss that tonight, but as we go on and he mentions what those levels are and how they're affected, we'll explain what those levels are specifically. But he says the first level is Shleimi Hadas, people who are more attuned to intellectual things. Think, and they're aware of what to think about. They're thinking people, Shleimi Hadas. There's much more to it, but let's for now, that suffices. And then there are people who are not so intellectually inclined that they've conditioned themselves to really think into everything, but they're on a level where they do think, but not to the extreme of the first group. And then there's the Hamonam, common person, doesn't think too much altogether, and he needs other things to arouse him and to influence him. And he'll explain what they are. Now he starts with the Shleimi Hadas, which I'm sure everybody here fits into that category, and therefore this is the Iker one, and when we get to the other ones, we'll learn them just in theory, you know, for the people who are not on that level.
Well, because we use the word inspire or arouse.
Yeah.
Moshe Shoshana doesn't use any word to say such.
Ma'orim.
Ma'orim means to awaken.
Ma'orim means to arouse and to inspire. Ma'orir doesn't mean to awake. We're not talking about someone who's sleeping. What does awaken mean?
To bring to one's consciousness.
No. So that's arousing a person. That arouses a person. What's arousing? Arousing is to bring somebody's consciousness. But awakening sounds like to wake you up from being asleep. Right.
I understand arousing means emotionally. I hear it's talking about intellectually. If you talk about you learn the Mari Chazal that open up these topics for the person. That's the Orim. And it's talking about its bonus. Everything is the whole thing is talking about when a person comes.
Right, but when a person being Maori yourself intellectually is not the end of the thing. The purpose of knowing these things is to be aroused to do something about it. So they go together. La'orer, right, doesn't mean only to make you aware of these intellectual things. It means to have an influence that you'll do something about it. So it's more than just awakening you to the fact. It means arousing you from that fact to what it's all about. That's the idea. It's not just an intellectual idea. Okay, now I have the knowledge. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking to be mizbonein, right, in knowledge that you have in a way that it'll be ma'orer you, that'll wake you up and arouse you. They go together. Okay, just to know the thing, that's just the idea, that's not enough. It has to go beyond that. Okay. So the Shleimi Hadas, Tielem He'ora, right, what will arouse, right, give them the impetus, right, the push, right, to want to be more careful. People on this high level are capable of functioning with the idea that the main thing in life is how much you can reach perfection. Perfection in this world, meaning spiritual perfection. That's all that really counts. How much money you have, right? How much tanugim you have doesn't interest them. What interests them is how much of perfection can I reach? The lo zulazeh, nothing else really matters that much. The she'ein ra gadol, there's nothing as bad. Michisorin hashleimus v'harchik mimenu. When you are lacking perfection or you're distanced from it. Okay, so now, this idea of shleimus, perfection, that is the crux of Avodas Hashem. It's not how much you do. And it's not quantity. Avodas Hashem is basically quality. The proof to that, one of the sources to that, is a Sforno in Parshas Emor. Torah over there says that an animal that has a mum, it's blemished, is possible for a korban. Can't use that as a tool to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it's blemished. The Sforno says, I understand blemishes that harm the animal, make the animal inferior. So an inferior animal is not something you can use to serve the Rabbanu Shalom. But there are certain blemishes that make an animal possible, that make the animal stronger, fatter. Why are those blemishes possible? That's a Sforno's question. Okay, certain things you can do to an animal that are considered a blemish and they're unfit for a sacrifice, in fact, make the animal better. Says the Sforno, because when it comes to Avodas Hashem, it's not how much, it's not how fat the animal is, how strong the animal is, it's how perfect it is. The way you serve the Rabbanu Shalom is with perfection. And that's why it says, Echad Amarba, Echad Amarba. It doesn't make a difference so much what the quantity is. It's what the quality is, and that depends on each person. Quantity differs what a person can do quantitative-wise. But according to what you can do, do it as perfect as you can. That's called Avodas Hashem. And even though there's no perfection in this world, but we strive towards perfection. And ultimately, the Rabbanu Shalom gives us that perfection. That's Olam Haba. That's a siyata d'shmaya that you get. You can never be perfect in this world because this is an imperfect world. And you're always striving in this world towards perfection. That's why to a living person, you greet them with leich lishalom. Go towards perfection. Shalom is shleimus, perfection. Only to a dead person you say leich bishalom. Go with the perfection you have. That's it. You're finished. Whatever you reach, you reach. But a living person is always going to more perfection. He's never reached perfection. He can't reach perfection in this world. But the Rabbanu Shalom, the more you strive towards that perfection, the Rabbanu Shalom will reward you with perfection in the next world. Whatever that means. Okay, in any case, so therefore, that's the Sforno. And that's hinted to in Sfiras HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer, you need tmimus. Every day has to be as perfect as possible. But we don't count all the days. We only count 49. The 50th, which is the perfection, that's the Rabbanu Shalom is Mekadosh. That's Yontif. That's Shavuos. So you don't count that day. But if you get to the 49, the Rabbanu Shalom will give you the 50th day, automatically. So that's a hint to this idea. The Divrei Bino Musar, one of the Bali Musar, says that how do you strive towards Shleimus? He says one of the major ideas in striving towards Shleimus is that you have one unified will in this world, not a million different things that you want. You have one goal. Everything else somehow goes towards that one goal. Because if you have a lot of different goals, you'll never reach perfection in any of them. But if you have one unified goal and then you use all the other things to aid it, then that one unified goal becomes what you want to become perfect in. And all the other things are aids. That is a what the Medrash says. We've quoted many times. David HaMelech, when he said, "Acha shalti nes Hashem," I only want one thing from the Rabban Shalom. So the Rabban Shalom told him, "David, you're not being honest with me, because you asked me for one thing, acha shalti, and then you give me a whole kapitel tilim, shifti veis Hashem, lachos benoam Hashem, levakar beheichalo, and a whole parak of tilim after that." So David HaMelech tells the Rabban Shalom, "I learned this trick from you. You do the same thing, Rabban Shalom. You say mo Hashem alokecha shoel mimach, as if the God only wants one thing, ki im liyira, and then you sneak in a whole other list. Uliyavo, ledovko, leches bechol drachov, lishmor kol chukov mitzvosav. So I learned that trick from you. I say I want one thing, I sneak in a whole shopping list, just like you did." What's the meaning of the Medrash? The meaning of the Medrash, I think, is that the Rabban Shalom Tak only wants one thing from us. He wants us to be Yirei Shamayim. As it says, Hein Yiras Hashem, Chazal say Hein in Greek is uni, one thing. There's only one thing, Yiras Hashem. All the other things, those things you need to be able to be a Yirei Shamayim. Or, if you'll have Yiras Hashem, you'll reach those other things too. They either are aids to reach Yiras Hashem, or they are the result of Yiras Hashem. But they all surround Yiras Hashem. There's only one thing that a person should want. But in order to get it, he needs other things, and once he has it, he will automatically have other things that he'll be able to be involved with. But he doesn't want those other things specifically. He wants Yiras Hashem. So David said, "I learned from you, Rabban Shalom, you can want one thing, but you need other things either to get it, or once you have that one thing, it'll lead you to all these other things automatically. But I don't want those things specifically. I only want them because they're part of what my sole desire is." Same thing, David HaMelech says. Same thing over here. You only want Yiras Hashem, Rabban Shalom. All the other things are aids to that, or results of that. Same thing. I only want one thing. Shifti v'veis Hashem kol yimei chayai. It's all I want. But in order to do that, I need other things. And once I'll have that, it'll lead to other things. I'm mentioning those other things, but not because they're separate things that I want. It's because they're all included in that one unified sole goal that I have of Shifti v'veis Hashem. So he says that that is the idea of, in order to reach shleimus and perfection, a person has to be single-minded. He can't want a million different things. He has to decide in his mind, what is the main thing that the Rabban Shalom wants from me in this world? I have to pursue that and pursue other things only because that reaches the perfection of that one thing. But if you fragment yourself into a million different things that you're running after, then you'll never reach perfection in anything. That's one point that he says. Another idea is that a person should realize that the greatest thing he can reach is perfection, and the most terrible thing is imperfection. Now, another point of this is the following. A person on this high level can feel what the Sfarno says in another place. And I used that to explain two other things that on the surface are very difficult to understand, but this concept explains them. The Sfarno says that vidui meiser, right? Every 3 years, the end of the third year, the fourth year, you have to confess what you did with your meiser, your trumas and meisers or whatever, over the past 3 year cycle. And Chazal called that vidui meiser, a confession of meiser. What does it contain? You come to the Rabban Shalom, you say, "Bi'arti HaKadosh Rabbayis, I got rid of all the holy things that I wasn't allowed to keep for myself, and I had to give it to the Kohen or the Levi or the poor person, or I had to bring it to Yerushalayim. I did everything exactly as you told me. I didn't forget anything. I did everything right." So the obvious question is, why is that called vidui? Some kind of confession. I confess I'm a tzaddik gomer. I didn't forget anything. I did everything right. What kind of confession is that? It's declaration. Hatzoras maisa, not vidui maisa. So we have various answers to this. The Sfarno says the following. He says the confession is, I confess that I'm not a Kohen. Because if I had been a Kohen, I would be able to eat these things myself. I wouldn't have to get them out of the house. Had my ancestors not sinned by the Chet HaEgel, all of us would have been Kohanim. We all could have eaten these things. We wouldn't have to get them out of the house and give them to other people. I confess, therefore, the sin of the golden calf, that I'm not a Kohen. Now, on the surface, that seems really weird, because I wasn't around when they served the golden calf. I didn't do it. I'm just an innocent seeming victim to what happened thousands of years ago. So what kind of confession? I confess, and not only that, in the end it says, really, Rabban Shalom, we deserve punishment because of that. But Hashkifa Monkotchika and changed the Hashkafa, which is normally meant for bad, for the good. But what did I deserve? I didn't do it. It happened a few thousand years ago. It's my ancestors. So some say the idea is that there's a blemish. But according to this idea, the idea is I'm confessing the fact that I'm imperfect. I could have been more perfect. Had it not been for the chet ha'ego, Klal Yisrael would have been more perfect. And every individual would have been more perfect, more potentially perfect. Now we lost that potential even. And to a person who cares about real avodas Hashem, a lack of perfection is the worst thing that could be. So I confess that I'm not as perfect as I could be. I'm missing that potential, and it bothers me. And because I don't have even the potential for that perfection, we lost that perfection as a cloud, it affects every individual. And it's something to confess, and it's something to feel that there's bad results in imperfection. All of the physical imperfections in the world come from spiritual imperfections. So really there should be punishments over here. Punishments meaning things that result from imperfection. But Rabbanu Shlom, since we're handling it properly, we're doing what we can, we're giving the tzedakah, whatever, have rachmanis on us. That's the svarna. Comes out that a person can feel terrible for imperfection he didn't cause, but he's a victim of. But still, the ma'isa, I'm imperfect. And that really bothers me. Just like the Mesillas Yesharim says, the worst thing is imperfection. With that, you can understand the following. It says that whoever cries on Yom Kippur, when they read the parasha of Achrimos, of Nadav and Avihu, and they cry for Nadav and Avihu, right, it's a schooler for kapara. That's one of the schoolers. I never understood that. How anybody could ever cry for Nadav and Avihu, right? I mean, if you told me that my great-great-grandmother, right, died a tragic death when she was 40, 300 years ago, right? I don't think there's anybody who would break down and start crying for the poor grandmother who died when she was 40, a tragic death 300 years ago. She was dead 300 years already, never met her, never knew who she was. Obviously, her death didn't affect my coming into this world because I'm here. So, you know, I feel a little bit bad or whatever, but they cry for her. A kol shekein v'kol shekein, Nadav and Avihu, I never met them, right? I don't know who they are. I mean, I know who they were, right? And they're dead for thousands of years. And now we read it, right? Raphael reads on Yom Kippur, right? Achrei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron. And they cry for other reasons, but not for the Nadav and Avihu. So to cry because Ayvei, Nadav and Avihu are dead, right? They were dead last year too, or the year before that. What? I can never understand. How could anybody, right, honestly, right, burst out crying because Nadav and Avihu are dead? Right? It's almost like the story they tell of this simple woman who was reading her Tzenna Re'ena, you know, her Medrash says about Mechiras Yosef. And what's it called? And she got to the end of the story, she was bawling, poor Yosef, the brothers sold him, and the poor young Yosef, or whatever. And people were very impressed. Wow, this woman, what's it called, you know, really got into the story, or whatever. Next year, come again to Parshas Vayeshev, you go through the same story, and she's dry-eyed. Somebody asked her, last year you were so, you know, what's it called, you know, worked up about this story, what happened? She said, look, Yosef didn't learn his lesson from last year and did again and got sold. And, you know, what's it called, I have no rachmanis on this guy anymore. So, you know, what's it called, it sounds like, you know, none of you were dead last year and I just cried for this year. Mamish can never understand it. However, with this idea, I'm not crying for Nadav and Avihu, but Kahuna, right, should have been dedicated in this world with four Kohanim. Aaron and his, with four Kohanim plus Aaron. Okay, five Kohanim. Two of them died, right? So the Kahuna was based only on three Kohanim instead of five. Had it been based on five, it would have been a lot more perfect. and it would have affected all of Klal Yisrael, not just the Kohanim. Right. And therefore, what? Because what Kohanim affect Klal Yisrael and the Kapara they affect is unbelievable. And the foundation of something makes the what comes after it completely different.
So it's probably really weren't six.
What?
Seven Kohanim.
No, but the Rabbanu Shlom said five, but it's only three and not five. It's something less than what could have been if there had been five. Right? Why there couldn't be more, that's the Rabbanu Shlom's deal. But there could have been five, and there was only three. So the foundation of Kahuna was lacking. The Mela, throughout the generations, something was lacking in Klal Yisrael. A person who's sensitive to imperfection could cry about that, which led me to believe that's the Avelis for Talmid Rabbi Akiva. Every year, we're mis'abel for the 24,000 Talmid Rabbi Akiva that died. It happened so many years ago, right? What? How can you feel bad for them? But the idea is, it's not feeling bad for them. I don't know them. I can't cry over 24,000 Talmid Rabbi Akiva, who died thousands of years ago. But it affects me. Because they were the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh. Because Rabbi Akiva's last five Talmidim were the foundation of all Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, had there been 24,000 of them, not five, imagine how much more perfect Torah would be in the world, Torah Shebaal Peh would be. Right? And therefore, if they died and they didn't become the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh, I suffer because of that. I'm not shalim. My Torah isn't shalim. Klal Yisrael's not shalim. For that, a person who's on a higher level can cry. That at least I understand. I can't say I can do it, but I can understand it. But to cry for people I never met who died thousands of years ago, that I can't b'chlal understand. So this idea at least explains that concept. So therefore, people on a high level have one mind to be as perfect as they can in fulfilling what they're supposed to do in this world. That's what bothers them. And any imperfection bothers them. Bothers them to no end, more than missing some money or missing some food or missing some nice clothing. That doesn't affect them, doesn't interest them. What interests them is, how perfect can I be? We're talking again, Shleime Hadas. These are people on a high level, maybe not our level, but that this is the only thing that interests them. And therefore, a person who's on that level, right, who is misvone in how much he has to strive towards perfection and what that perfection entails, is going to be very careful to make sure that he does the things that bring him the perfection, which we'll see next week, and stay away from the things that lose him that perfection. So that's the first incentive to people who are on a high level, the incentive of perfection and the incentive of not wanting to be imperfect. Yeah. The difference between what? Chisaron Hashleimus means that you have something negative. Okay? In other words, you have some kind of sin that not only makes you imperfect in a passive way, but imperfect in an active way, something negative. Harchaka mimenu means you have nothing negative, but you haven't reached the positive. That's the difference between.